set, a beautiful dream, waking from a nightmare. It was every wonderful moment balled into one. I love you too.
I know. That's how I know everything is going to be all right.
I'll get dressed. Leave Mrs. Mason a note, and then we can go, I said through the door. I slipped his hoodie on over my shirt that now smelled like Mrs. Mason's bright house instead of the dark, dank juniper.
I'll be here when you're ready.
Chapter 34. Catherine. Lee carved into the chicken enchilada casserole, making 12 perfect squares. She sat next to John, puffing out a tired sigh. It looks amazing, I said. She smiled at me from across the table. Elliot leaned over a votive centerpiece holding a white candle, fake snow, and a few pine cones to scoop out a square for me. He placed the layers of tortilla, sauce, shredded chicken, and avocado on my plate, and then proceeded to do the same for his aunt, uncle, and his mom to his right.
If you like it,
Elliot said, sitting after he scooped two pieces for himself.
Remind me to get the recipe from Aunt Lee before we move.
We? Kay asked, raising an eyebrow.
College or traveling?
Elliot said, shoveling a large piece into his mouth. He sat back and hummed as he chewed. Lee smiled.
Elliot, something came for you today.
College or traveling?
Kay deadpanned. She looked to me, and I froze mid-bite.
So which is it?
I'm not going anywhere. I have to help Mama run the juniper.
Elliot wiped his mouth with his napkin, craning his neck at me. He laughed once, nervous.
Catherine, I thought we'd decided.
No,
I said simply, taking a bite.
You're really staying here?
He asked. I widened my eyes to signal that I didn't want to discuss it in present company, but Elliot showed no signs of backing off.
Come on. You don't want to stay here. Tell me I'm wrong,
he said. I told you I don't have a choice. His eyebrows pulled together, unimpressed with my answer.
Yes, you do.
He watched me, and I scanned the table, shrinking under everyone's stare. I cringed. I can't leave her. Kay smirked, happily popping casserole into her mouth.
Elliot,
Lee said, stopping her nephew before he said anything else.
Just wait a second. Something came for you today. I want you to see it before this conversation gets much further.
She stood, turning for the living room, and returned within seconds, an envelope in her hand. She held it in front of Elliot, and he took it from her, reading the front.
It's from Baylor, he said.
Open it,
Kay said, turning to face her son. It was the first time I'd seen her smile. Elliot's capable, large fingers turned clumsy as he tore open the seal. He removed the paper and unfolded it.
Mr. Youngblood,
he read aloud. His eyes glanced from left to right and then back again, bouncing over the paragraphs. He closed the paper and placed it next to his napkin.
What?
Kay said.
What does it say?
It's about the scholarship. They want a verbal commitment in 7 days.
That's kind of early, isn't it? Lee asked.
I'm not sure,
Elliot said.
They're doing it earlier and earlier, John said. This is good news. Baylor is your first choice, right?
Elliot turned to me.
Catherine,
don't look at her,
Kay said.
This is your education, your decision. You said Baylor was your first choice.
Mom,
Elliot warned. His confidence around his mother had grown. He wasn't afraid to hurt her anymore. She was no longer the only woman in his life, and I could see the recognition of that on Kay's face. He didn't take his eyes off me.
Verbal commitments aren't a guarantee, John said.
Kay's fork scraped against her plate.
You act as if you can't come back to visit her. You're coming back to visit, aren't you?
It's not about that,
Elliot snapped. He still watched me, waiting for an answer.
Is this about me coming with you?
I asked, my voice small. I can't leave you here alone.
Kay's fork clanged against her plate at the same time that her palm slapped the table.
I knew it! My God, son, she's not helpless!
Kay, John chided. Elliot's mother pointed at me.
You're not going to keep him from going to college and rob him of this opportunity.
I was taken aback by her sudden vitriol. Kay had never pretended to like me, but she'd also never been so directly hostile.
He should go. I want him to go.
Kay nodded once, settling back into her chair.
Then maybe he can get out of the mess you've put him in. Mom, enough!
Elliot growled. Lee snarled, disgusted.
This was supposed to be a celebratory moment. You can't think about someone else for 2 seconds. Not even your own son.
Kay's eyes widened.
This is my fault? I wanted him to move back to Yukon with me. If he'd been there, he wouldn't be under investigation right now, would he? He didn't want to live in Yukon, Kay. Maybe he would have if you had been on my side. He stayed here, just like you wanted, and now look, he could go to prison. I told you this town was trouble.
You're really going to blame me? For giving him a home? For taking care of him when you wouldn't get out of bed?
How dare you! I was depressed. I couldn't help it.
Kay wailed.
He might as well be mine, Kay. That's how much I love him. He's not yours!
Kay said. Standing, she pressed her palms against the table.
He's my son, not yours!
Elliot stood and calmly walked to the kitchen. A drawer squeaked when he pulled it open, and then he returned, holding a long rectangular box. We watched him unroll the foil and tear a piece off. He covered my plate, and then he did the same for his. He stacked them, holding them in his hand along with our forks, and then waited for me.
Elliot, Lee pleaded, I'm so sorry.
We'll eat downstairs.
He gestured for me to follow, and I did, hearing Kay snipe at Lee again as we reached the stairs. Elliot shut the door behind us, and then we walked down the stairs and to his bed, sitting on it with our plates. Elliot's fork scraped the ceramic, and he filled his mouth with casserole, staring at the floor. Lee's and Kay's muffled arguing filtered down the stairs. The sound gave me a strange sense of familiarity.
You're smiling, Elliot said.
Oh, I swallowed the bite of food in my mouth before I spoke again. It just reminded me of when my parents would fight. I haven't heard that in a long time.
He listened for a bit, and then the corners of his mouth turned up.
It does sound a little like the first night we talked.
I nodded, taking another bite. Even as Lee's and Kay's voices went up an octave and the fighting escalated, the air in the basement felt lighter. I pretended it was my parents, all shouting and no listening. Black and white photos of me, Elliot and me, a swing at Beetle Park, and the field we used to explore when we first met hung from a string that began in the corner of his room and stopped at a faded green hutch pushed against the center of the back wall. More photos of me and us were in frames at his bedside and taped to the wall in collages.
Lots of me and not much else, he shrugged.
They say you photograph what you love the most.
I picked up his camera, pointed it at him, and snapped a picture. He beamed.
Do you miss your dad?
I asked, looking through the photos on the digital display.
He calls once in a while, probably when he can't stand feeling like a no-good piece of crap another day. Do you miss yours?
Every second, I said, sighing. I stared at the floor.
And I meant what I said. I want you to go to Baylor.
I meant what I said about not leaving you here alone.
I'm not alone.
You know what I mean.
I put his camera back on the table. You realize I was alone at the Juniper for 2 years before you showed up again.
He sighed, frustrated. You're already living with Mrs. Mason.
Just until you graduate and move.
All emotion left his face. So that's it? You're just buying time for me so I can go to college? Then you're going back there?
You're speaking in question marks again.
Yeah, I do that when I'm upset. You have zero concern for your own safety. How am I supposed to leave knowing that?
You're such a hypocrite, I snapped. He touched his chest.
I'm a hypocrite?
You're saying I shouldn't put myself in what you perceive to be danger for you when you're talking about throwing away your college career for me.
Perceive as danger? I have no idea what's going on in your house, but I know it's not safe.
I wrinkled my nose. It's not my house.
See?
He said, putting down his plate and standing. He pointed at me with his whole hand.
That's not normal. You're going to go back and continue to live in a place you don't consider home.
Oklahoma has never felt like home to me. He knelt in front of me, holding my legs.
Then come to Texas with me.
I cupped his cheeks. I can't afford it.
So get a loan.
I can't afford to pay off a loan. I'm going to have to get a second job so we don't lose the juniper.
Why would you want to keep it?
He yelled. He stood up and walked away, pacing the floor.
I don't want to keep it. I don't want to keep its secrets. I wish I didn't have to, but I do.
He turned to me.
Don't you know, Catherine?
What?
I snapped. That's the beauty of a secret. Trust. Trust me with this. Let me help you.
You mean I should let you save me?
He swallowed. We could save each other.
I glared at him, angry that he was making my resolve waver. I've already moved out. I've already left her so you could keep your scholarship. You can't ask me for this, too.
He pointed to the floor. You're not safe there. You'll never be safe there. I can't pack up and move knowing that. If something happened, I'd be 6 hours away.
I set my plate next to me and breathed out a laugh.
You think this is funny?
We sound like my parents.
Elliot's shoulders sagged. Catherine, I'm in love with you. I won't leave you here.
I looked away, feeling cornered. We don't have to decide tonight.
No, but I know you. You'll put it off until I pack the Chrysler and gas up. Then you'll tell me you're not coming. And you know what? I'll just unpack. I'll get a job and rent a room at the Juniper.
I turned to face him. You can't, I said, shaking my head. He held his hands out at his sides and then let them fall to his thighs.
I guess neither one of us will have a choice but to stay here.
I rubbed my temples. I'm getting a headache. I should probably go home. When Elliot didn't respond, I looked up, meeting his gaze. What?
That's the first time I've heard you call a place home since freshman year.
He sat next to me on the bed, looking exhausted. He slid his arm behind my shoulders, pulling me to his side. Sometimes he seemed twice my size, my own personal giant. He'd changed so much since he left the last time, and I imagined when he left again, the next time we saw each other, we'd be strangers. I didn't want Elliot to be a stranger even more than I didn't want to go back to the Juniper.
I can get you something for your headache.
I shook my head. Elliot lay back against his pillow, bringing me with him. I let the heat from his chest sink into my cheek, helping every muscle in my body to relax. He ran his fingers through my hair, starting from my temples and moving back to the nape of my neck. Listening to Kay and Lee fight and then arguing with Elliot was exhausting. I looked up at the tiny white lights strung along his ceiling and closed my eyes, pretending they were stars blurring together just before everything went black.
Elliot? Kay said in a soft voice.
I rubbed my eyes and peered up at her. The hardness in her expression was gone, the hate in her eyes absent. She sat on the bed next to her still-sleeping son. Elliot created a large wall between us, his chest rising and falling with each breath. "Hi, Catherine."
"Hi," I said, sitting up on my elbow.
The lampshade cast a dim, yellow glow, and except for the hum of the heater, the room was silent. She didn't speak for a full minute, instead spending the time staring at the floor. She fidgeted before she spoke, a trait Elliot emulated often.
"You make him happy. I know he loves you. I just don't know why. No offense."
"It's okay. I don't really know why either."
She breathed out a laugh and shook her head. "We've had so many fights about Oak Creek, and come to find out, they were all about you."
"I'm sorry."
It was the only thing I could manage. Elliot shared so many of her features that it was hard to feel anything but love for her. He tried to get to you so many times, and it seemed like the harder I fought him to stay, the more he wanted to leave. I thought it was the usual teenage crush, but he was anxious, irritable. It was like he couldn't breathe. I looked down at Elliot, sleeping on his side, his back to his mother, with one arm around my middle. He looked so peaceful, so different from the boy she described. He was just 15. Now he's 18, and I spend most of that time either fighting his dad or fighting him. I wasted it. Maybe you'll find out one day. I hope you do. Not any time soon, but one day. He used to look at me the way he looks at you. Different, of course, but with that same honest, unbreakable love in those big brown eyes. I know what it's like to be his favorite person in the whole world. I envy you.
You don't know what it's like to hear him talk about you, I said.
She turned her gaze on me. What do you mean?
He's listened to you. He quotes you sometimes. He thinks you're wise.
Wise, huh?
She looked at the stairs. Wasn't expecting that word. Her expression crumpled.
Catherine, if you love him, and I know you do, you will find a way to get him to go to college. This is his chance.
I nodded. She sighed.
He'd follow you anywhere. Maybe this time you could return the favor. That, or set him free. That's what I had to do when I wasn't good for him anymore.
Thank God.
Her eyes glossed over.
If that's what you choose, that I don't envy.
She stood, gathering our dirty plates, and climbed the stairs. Her footsteps marked her location until the door opened and then closed. Elliot turned over, staring up at me without expression or judgment, but more like he was waiting for that from me.
"You were awake that whole time?"
I asked.
"A little trick I learned from my dad. Mom hates waking us up."
He sat up and swung his legs over until his feet were on the floor, his elbows planted on his knees. He stared at the rug beneath his socked feet. I rubbed his back.
"You okay?"
"I have a bad feeling,"
he said, his voice soft and sleepy. I wrapped my arms around his middle and hugged him from behind, then kissed his shoulder.
"We have more than 7 months before you leave."
"Even if you break up with me, I won't go. Mom has good intentions, but she has no clue what I'll do or what I'll give up for you."
"Don't say that too loud. Half the town already thinks you murdered Presley for me."
His eyebrows furrowed.
"Then at least they have an inkling."
I stood.
"Don't say that. That's not funny."
"None of this is funny."
Elliot stood and walked to the hutch. He opened a drawer and then closed it, turning around. In his hand was a flat box the size of a notebook, wrapped in white paper and tied in red and green string. He took a step toward me.
"Merry Christmas."
I shrugged one shoulder.
It's tomorrow.
I know. Open it.
I pulled the string and lifted the lid, revealing a black and white photo of Dad and me just a day or two before he died. We were standing on the porch, smiling at each other. It was a quiet moment, one that I had forgotten. The frame was a decoupage of more photos of my dad, some of just him, some of us together. I covered my mouth with my hands, my eyes instantly filling with tears that overflowed down my cheeks. Chapter 35. Catherine. Elliot put the Chrysler in park, the engine idling in Mrs. Mason's driveway. Her car could be seen through the small square windows of the garage door, and although the lights were out, it was comforting to know she was inside waiting for me. Elliot slid his fingers between mine and then lifted my hand to his lips. "Thank you for today, and for this," I said, tapping the box with the frame inside.
"You like it?"
he asked. I nodded. "You don't get yours until tomorrow."
"Fair enough."
"It's not much."
"You didn't have to get me anything. When can I see you?"
"Around noon? Oh, God."
"What?"
"I didn't get Mrs. Mason anything."
"She won't care, Catherine."
"But they got me presents."
"They?"
"Mr. Mason brought some by. Oh, my God, I'm awful. I should have done something for them today."
Elliot chuckled. "It's fine. If you want, we can find something tomorrow, and you can give it to them then."
"Like what?"
He narrowed his eyes. "I don't know. We'll sleep on it."
I leaned over to peck his lips, but he grabbed my arm. "What?" I asked, still smiling. Elliot's grin faded.
"I still have a bad feeling. I'm going to walk you to the door. I can do that now, right?"
I nodded. Elliot left the motor running, and we walked hand in hand to the door. I turned the knob and pushed, the alarm beeping at me, so I entered my code and pressed disarm. "See? All good," I whispered.
"I guess my bad feeling is just about dropping you off."
"Merry Christmas," I said, rising on the balls of my feet. I pecked his lips and then waved, watching him walk to his car. The Christmas tree was lit, the soft glow lighting my way to the kitchen. I paused for a moment, feeling something sticky under my feet, and then continued over the tile floor to the light switch. I heard the Chrysler back out of the drive and pull away, and I flipped on the light. My mouth fell open, and my stomach instantly felt sick as I traced the bright red spatters and smears along the countertops, the refrigerator door, and the floor. Someone had been dragged across the kitchen, four small streaks from fingers left behind as whoever it was futilely clawed at the tile. The body was dragged through the utility room and out the garage door. I swallowed back the bile rising in my throat, my trembling hand covering my mouth. The blood told a violent story, and whoever had left it behind didn't have much more to spare.
"Becca,"
I called, my voice small. I cleared my throat.
"Becca!"
Slick crimson made my hand slip over the knob as I tried to turn it, finally getting some traction long enough to get the door open.
"Becca!"
The light flickered when I flipped the light switch, the fluorescent rectangle above igniting one tube at a time. My stomach sank. Blood on the floor had been marked in and then used to write scribbles on the wall. Tears fell down my cheeks.
Becca!
I backed out of the garage door and the kitchen, then fumbled through the dark to the hallway, unable to recall where to find the next light switch. I reached around a doorway and swept my hand against the wall, finally lighting the way. I looked to the left. My bedroom door was open. To the right, one side was smeared with crimson, leading from Mrs. Mason's bedroom. My entire body shook, every hair standing on end as I forced myself to take a step toward Mrs. Mason's end of the hall. The door was standing wide open, and I called for my guardian into the dark. "Mrs. Mason?" I asked, my voice refusing to rise above a whisper. I reached for the wall, the light exposing more of the bloody mess. Mrs. Mason's purse was on her dresser, and I ran past it, checking the bathroom. "Becca?" I said, my voice shrill. I scrambled for her purse, dumping it out onto the bed. Change, a wallet, and makeup fell out, along with her phone. I swiped it from the bedspread and dialed the first number in her recent calls list.
"Hello?"
Mr. Mason answered, sounding confused. It's me, Mr. Mason. It's Catherine."
"Catherine, you okay? What's going on?"
"I just got home. I ran across the room to shut and lock Mrs. Mason's door. "I'm in the house."
"Okay, Catherine, let me speak to Becca."
"She's not here," I whispered. Even my voice was shaking. "There's blood. There's blood everywhere." I choked out, feeling hot tears stream down my face.
"Blood? Catherine, let me talk to Becca right now."
"She's not here. She's not here, and there's blood trailing from her bedroom to the garage."
"I'm hanging up, Catherine. I'm going to call the police. You sit tight."
"No, don't hang up. I'm afraid."
"I'll call the police, and then I'll call you right back. I'm getting in the car. I'll be there in 5 minutes."
The phone went silent, and I held it against my cheek, keeping my eyes shut tight to block out the gruesome scene in the bedroom. I didn't know what else to do, so I counted. I counted to 10, and then 20, and then 100, and then 500. At 5:06, the front door crashed against the Christmas tree, the ornaments and lights dancing with the branches.
"Catherine!"
Mr. Mason bellowed, police sirens sounding in the distance. I scrambled to my feet, sprinting down the hallway and into Mr. Mason's arms, sobbing. He hugged me, nearly panting.
"Are you okay?"
he asked, holding me at bay.
"Becca!"
he called. I shook my head, unable to form a single word. Mr. Mason trudged into the kitchen and saw the mess for himself. He ran into the garage and then the yard, calling for his wife. He came back inside, slipping and then falling to his knees. He looked at the blood on his hands.
"What happened?" he cried. "Where is she?"
I shook my head and then covered my mouth with my hand. Two police cars parked in front of Mrs. Mason's house. Their blue and red lights flickered in the front room, drowning out the soft white light of the Christmas tree. A police officer knelt beside me.
"Are you all right, miss?"
I nodded. A second officer froze in the dining room.
"We need to search the house, sir. I need you to step outside."
Mr. Mason stood, turned on his heel, and made a beeline for the door, grabbing my arm and tugging me along with him. An ambulance pulled into the driveway, and paramedics jumped out. After a short search and seizure in the back, one brought two blankets while the other ran into the house.
"What did you see?"
Mr. Mason asked, draping the blanket around my shoulders.
Nothing. I just got here."
"From where?"
"Elliot brought me from..."
"Elliot was here?"
he asked.
"He dropped me off. He walked me to the door, but he didn't come in."
"Where is he now?"
"He left. He was gone before I turned the light on and saw..." Do you think that's her blood?"
He hugged me, and his words stuck in his throat for a moment.
"Christ, I hope not."
We stood by one of the police cars, huddled and shivering. One by one, the neighbors stepped out to watch the officers and paramedics travel in and out. More police arrived, and then Detective Thompson. He eyed me as he walked across the front yard to the house, the police cruiser's lights casting shadows on his face.
"Why don't you two sit in the back of the ambulance, where it's warm?"
one of the paramedics said.
"Did you find her?"
Mr. Mason asked in a daze. The man shook his head, pressing his lips together in a hard line.
Doesn't look like she's in there.
Mr. Mason took a deep breath, and I followed him into the ambulance.
If she's not in there, and they took her, maybe she's still alive,
Mr. Mason said. Her fingers? There were marks on the floor, like she was trying to hang on to something, I said.
Just stay. She fought. Of course she did.
His bottom lip trembled, and then he pinched the bridge of his nose, choking out a cry. I touched his shoulder. She's going to be okay. They'll find her. He nodded and held out his phone. He cleared his throat.
Do you want to call Elliot?
I shrugged, my bottom lip trembling. I don't know his number. Mr. Mason wiped his eyes with the sleeve of his coat.
You were with him all day?
His mom is in town. He was home all day, I swear.
He's a good kid.
He ran his hand over his hair.
I need to call Lauren, but Christ.
Lauren's her sister?
Yeah.
The door opened and Detective Thompson climbed in, sitting next to me. He pulled out a notebook and a pen.
Catherine.
I nodded.
Can you tell me what happened tonight?
I was at Elliot's all day. I came home and Mrs. Becca's car was here, so I assumed she was home. Elliot walked me to the door, kissed me goodbye, then I walked across the living room, the dining room, and switched on the light. That's when I saw
The detective nodded, scribbling in his notepad. Mr. Mason cleared his throat again.
Looks like the whole police force is here.
Pretty much,
Thompson said, still scribbling.
Who's looking out for her?
Mr. Mason asked. Thompson's head popped up.
Pardon? The paramedic said she's not in the house. Who's out searching for my wife?
Thompson narrowed his eyes.
No one. No one's looking for her.
Why the hell not?
Mr. Mason said. For the first time, I heard anger in his voice. He still loved her.
If she's not here, then she's out there somewhere. Why aren't you out there looking for her?
We need to get some information first, Mr. Mason, and then we can get started.
Catherine, about what time did you leave the Mason's home for the Youngbloods?
I shrugged. I'm not sure. 10:30, maybe?
This morning?
Yes.
And you were at the Youngbloods all day? Until what time?
Tonight? An hour ago, maybe?
And where was Elliot today?
With me.
All day?
Yes. He came to the Masons this morning. She went to the grocery store. I left her a note, and we left for his house.
You left a note? Where?
On the kitchen counter. He scribbled.
At any point, did Elliot leave?
No! Why don't you find Mrs. Mason instead of trying to pin this on Elliot? It wasn't him! I yelled.
Mr. Mason pointed down the road.
Kirk, put down your damn notepad and go find my wife!
Thompson frowned.
Were there children in the home at any time today?
What? I asked.
Lauren's kids, Mr. Mason said. They visit every Christmas Eve. They open presents and have dinner.
Who's Lauren?
Thompson asked.
Becca's sister. Why?
There are drawings in the garage. A child's drawings in the blood.
I swallowed. Mr. Mason immediately fished his phone from his pocket and dialed.
Lauren? You home? I'm sorry for waking you. Are the kids home? Yes, I know, but can you check for me? Just do it!
He waited, his knee bobbing.
What?
He held the phone to his chest and closed his eyes, relieved. He spoke quietly to Thompson.
There, in bed.
The detective nodded.
I'm sorry, Lauren. No, it's Becca. I'm not sure. It looks bad. The police are here at the house. She's not here. Did she say anything to you? No. They'll come to you. I don't know, Lauren. I'm sorry.
As Mr. Mason spoke to his sister-in-law, Detective Thompson gestured for me to follow him outside of the ambulance into the yard.
What else can you tell me?
He asked. That's it. That's all I know, I said, pulling the blanket tighter around me.
You're sure?
I nodded. Thompson stared at the house.
It's lucky Elliot was with you all day. This matches Presley's disappearance.
What? How?
The child's drawings. Same thing all over Presley's bedroom walls. We kept that quiet while we did our investigating. We told Presley's parents to keep it confidential, too.
In blood? Thompson nodded. I covered my mouth and closed my eyes. Thompson left me to return to the Mason's home. I could hear Mr. Mason trying to calm Lauren down. Before I could stop myself, I dropped the blanket and ran. Down the Mason street for blocks and then miles until I felt like my fingers were frozen and my lungs would burst. I didn't stop until I was standing at the end of the dark road in front of the juniper. The lights were still broken, the stars snuffed out by cloud cover. The gate creaked as I pushed through, my feet stumbling over the uneven sidewalk. I climbed the steps of the porch and stopped at the front door. "Go in, Catherine. You're a warrior, not a princess," I said aloud. I reached for the knob and pushed, startled when it popped open. The juniper was dark, creaking and breathing like it always had.
"Mama?"
I called, leaning against the door until it closed behind me. I struggled to catch my breath, my hands screaming in pain as the blood returned to my fingertips. It wasn't much warmer in the juniper than outside, but at least I was protected from the freezing wind. Many voices filtered up from the basement, arguing, crying, whining, and yelling, and then they stopped, making way for the juniper to stretch and breathe. Beyond the groaning and howling of the walls was a muffled whimper. I walked down the hall, past the dining room and kitchen to reach the basement door, and then held my ear against the cold wood. Another whimper, another deep voice scolding whoever was downstairs. Duke. I opened the door, trying my best to be quiet, but Duke wasn't paying attention, too intent on venting his anger. I inched down the steps, Duke's voice getting louder the deeper I descended.
"I told you," Duke growled. "I warned you, didn't I?"
"Daddy, stop! You're scaring her!"
Poppy cried. I peeked around the corner, seeing Duke standing in front of Mrs. Mason. She was sitting in a chair in her bare feet and cotton nightgown, her hands tied behind her back, gagged by a dirty sock, secured by a piece of cloth that was pulled across her mouth and tied at the nape of her neck. Her right eye was purple and swollen, blood dried and matted to a spot just above her right temple. Her torso was soaked in blood. Her face was dirty, tears creating tracks down her face. Mrs. Mason spotted me. Her left eye widened, and she shook her head. Duke started to turn. Mrs. Mason made a ruckus, pushing off with her feet and banging the chair against the floor as she screamed through the cloth she was gagged with.
"Shut up!" Duke spat. "You just couldn't stand it, could you? You had to stick your nose in where it didn't belong. We told you to stay away from her, didn't we?"
Mrs. Mason's face crumpled, and she began to cry again.
"Please,"
she managed to say around the gag. A door upstairs slammed, and Elliot's voice bellowed through the house.
"Catherine!"
he screamed.
"Catherine, can you hear me?"
Mrs. Mason froze, the whites of her eyes showing her surprise. She began bouncing up and down, banging the legs of the chair against the concrete floor, and yelling what sounded like, "Help!" and "I'm down here!" Duke's eyes danced toward the ceiling, and then he looked at Mrs. Mason, raising his bat. I flattened myself against the wall, closed my eyes, and then stepped out in full view of Duke.
"Enough!" I said, hoping my voice sounded braver than I felt.
"Catherine!"
Duke said, surprised. The underarms of his short-sleeved button-down were soaked with sweat, the rest of his shirt smeared and spattered in blood. Mrs. Mason had fought, evident by the scratches on his cheek. He was holding my dad's wooden baseball bat in one hand, a roll of twine in the other.
What are you doing here?
The detective said he saw a child's drawing in Becca's blood.
I knew it was Poppy's, I said.
Poppy whimpered.
It wasn't my fault. I want to go to bed.
You can, I said, reaching out for her. Duke showed his teeth and growled.
You're not supposed to be here. Get out and take that boy with you.
My eyes drifted to Mrs. Mason, dirty, cold, and afraid.
And her.
No,
he pointed at her.
She's ruined everything. Do you have any idea what your mother's been through?
Where is she? I want to talk to her. Duke shook his head.
No. No, you can't.
I know she misses me. Is she here?
No.
He seethed. Elliot's footsteps barreled down the steps, and I held up one finger to Duke. Don't talk. Duke opened his mouth, but I pointed at him.
You say one word, and I will never come back.
Elliot froze at the bottom of the stairs, his eyes dancing between Mrs. Mason, Duke, and me.
Holy, are you okay?
He asked, taking a step. Duke raised his weapon and took a step toward Elliot. I held up both hands to stop him, then looked to Elliot, making sure not to turn my back on the man with the bat.
You need to go. Take Mrs. Mason with you. She needs an ambulance. Elliot?
Yeah?
He said, unable to look away from Duke.
Get your cell phone. Call 911.
Elliot pulled his phone from his back pocket and dialed the numbers. I walked around Mrs. Mason's chair slowly, sure to maintain plenty of distance between Duke and me. Sweat dripped from his hairline as his eyes danced between Elliot speaking quietly to the emergency operator and me circling Mrs. Mason's chair. He was breathing hard, tired and slow. By the purple half-moons under his eyes, I decided he hadn't slept, and it would be easy to confuse him, outmaneuver him if necessary. Keeping my eyes on Duke, I leaned down to untie Mrs. Mason's bloody wrists and then reached for her ankles, pulling on the twine. Her body was trembling from the cold. Even if she wasn't already suffering from hypothermia, the blood loss was enough to be dangerous. Duke took a quick step forward, but so did Elliot, drawing his attention.
Don't, I warned Duke. She's freezing, and she's lost a lot of blood. I'm taking her to a doctor. Did you call?
I asked Elliot. He nodded, pointing with his free hand to the phone at his ear.
The mansion on Juniper. I'm not sure of the address. The Calhouns. Please hurry.
Elliot hung up without warning, shoving the phone back into his pocket. After struggling with the knot, I finally freed Mrs. Mason's ankles. She fell to the floor and crawled to Elliot. He helped her to her feet.
Catherine, come on, she said, shivering and struggling to see.
She reached out for me, her entire body shuddering with fear.
Come on. Elliot, she needs a doctor, I said. Take her.
I'm not leaving,
Elliot said, his voice breaking. Mrs. Mason pushed Elliot to the side and limped one step forward, standing tall in defiance of Duke.
Come with us, Catherine. Right now.
I took off Elliot's hoodie and my boots.
What are you doing?
Duke barked. I held my finger to my mouth and tossed them all to Elliot. Duke took another step, and I stood between them.
No,
I said firmly, the way Dad used to speak to our dog. Elliot gave Mrs. Mason the sweatshirt and my boots, leaning down to help her slide her bloody bare feet inside each one. He stood when she swayed, keeping her on her feet.
Catherine,
she began, holding the hoodie to her chest.
Put it on,
I commanded. She did as I asked and then reached for me again.
Catherine, please.
Shut up,
Duke barked.
I told you not to speak,
I screamed, my body shaking with anger. Duke dropped the twine, took two steps, and raised the bat with both hands. I turned and closed my eyes, waiting for the blow, but nothing happened. My eyes popped open, and I stood upright, seeing that Elliot was holding Duke's wrist, glowering at my assailant. Elliot's voice was low and menacing.
Don't you touch her.
Chapter 36. Elliot. Mavis's eyes softened as she looked at my fingers curled tightly around her squishy wrist. She tried to swing the bat at me, but I caught it, ripping it from her fingers. Seconds before, she had been stronger, more like my Uncle John. "Put it down," I growled. Mavis pulled her wrist from my grip, holding the hand I'd restrained to her chest.
"How dare you! Get out! Get out of my home!"
Mavis said, taking a few steps back. Catherine held out her hands as if she were trying to calm a wild animal.
"Mama? It's okay."
Mavis sat on her haunches in the corner of the room, grabbing her knees, rocking and whimpering. Catherine knelt in front of her mother and swept Mavis's tightly wound curls from her face.
"It's going to be okay." "I want to go to bed," Mavis said in a child's voice.
"Shh," Catherine said. "I'll take you to bed. It's okay."
"Oh, my God," Mrs. Mason whispered from behind me. "How many are there?"
"How many of what?" I asked, feeling more confused by the second.
"Seven,"
Catherine said, helping Mavis to her feet.
"Mrs. Mason, this is Poppy. She's Duke's daughter, and she's 5. "He didn't mean it," Mavis said, wiping her cheek. "He just gets mad sometimes, but he doesn't mean it."
"Hi, Poppy," Mrs. Mason said, attempting to smile while she hugged her middle. My sweatshirt swallowed her, and even with the added layer in the boots, she still shivered. Her face was paling by the minute.
"Oh."
She leaned against me, and I held her against my side.
"I'm dizzy and nauseous. I think I'm going into shock."
"You're not looking so good," I said. Mavis began brushing off her dirty shirt.
"My goodness," Catherine's mom said in a different voice. "I have been doing laundry all day. And would you look at me?"
She smiled at us, embarrassed.
"I'm a fright."
She looked to Catherine.
"I told that man not to. I begged him. Duke doesn't listen. Doesn't listen at all."
"It's okay, Althea," Catherine said. What I was seeing didn't make sense. It was as if Catherine and her mom were playing a prank, with Mavis speaking in different voices and Catherine acting like it was normal, was real. I watched it all in disbelief.
"Catherine,"
I said, taking a step. Mavis dropped to the floor and crawled toward me on all fours like a dog, but her movements were rigid and unnatural. I stopped and stepped back, feeling Mrs. Mason's nails claw into my shoulders.
"What the?"
I said, leaning back. Catherine ran to stand between me and her mom.
"Mama!"
she cried, her voice desperate.
"I need you! I need you right now!"
Mavis stopped at Catherine's feet, drew her knees to her chest, and curled into a ball. She rocked, and the basement got silent as she hummed the same tune from Catherine's music box, then giggled.
"Elliot," Mrs. Mason whispered, "we should go."
She tugged on my arm, but I couldn't take my eyes off Catherine. She tended to her mother, waiting for Mavis to speak, waiting to hear who she was talking to.
"There are no guests, are there?" I asked.
Catherine looked up at me, her eyes wet. She shook her head.
"That's the secret," I said. "Catherine, come with me," Mrs. Mason said, reaching for her.
She paused, reacting to the sound of sirens in the distance. Mavis lunged for Mrs. Mason's arm, grabbing it with both hands and biting down. Mrs. Mason screamed.
"Stop! Stop!"
Catherine yelled.
I grabbed Mavis's jaw and squeezed. She groaned, growled, and then whimpered, releasing Mrs. Mason's arm and crawling away. She sat and then began to laugh uncontrollably, throwing her head back. Mrs. Mason held her arm out and yanked up the arm of my hoodie, pressing her fingers into her skin just above the wound. Six holes in a perfect crescent shape oozed crimson. "Did you..." Catherine swallowed, looking nauseous. "Did you take Presley?" Mavis's expression changed. "We saw her sleeping in her room. She was so peaceful, like she hadn't just tried to leave you stranded." So Duke wrapped his fist around all the pretty blonde hair, and we yanked her out her window. No one keeps their windows locked in this town. "Chicago," I said, recognizing the voice, the same one that had come to Catherine's bedroom door and tried to come in. "That's Willow." "Where is she?" Catherine asked. Her body was stiff, waiting for the answer. "No one came for her," Willow smirked. "I don't know what happened, but I know Duke buried her in the dirt plot next door with the others." "The Fentons?" Catherine asked, tears streaming down her cheeks. "That's right," Willow said. She turned, walking to the chair Mrs. Mason had been tied to. "That little bitch sat in her own shit for days, right here." Catherine's expression crumbled. "Mama," she cried, "I can't follow you here." "Go, baby," Mavis said, a tear streaming down her cheek. She sounded like Althea again. "Hurry." Catherine pushed me backward. "Go," she whispered, speaking through her teeth. "Not without you," I said, trying to keep my voice calm. "I'm going. Go." I scooped Mrs. Mason into my arms and walked up the stairs backward, making sure Catherine was following. The laughing stopped, and a man's voice growled. Loud footsteps stomped up the stairs, and Catherine ran.
"Go! Run!"
she pleaded. At the top of the stairs, Catherine closed the door behind her. She locked it, touching her forehead to the wood. She sniffed a few times and then looked at Mrs. Mason, exhaustion in her red-rimmed eyes.
"She's not down there."
"Who?" I asked.
"Mama. How do I explain that it wasn't her? That it's not her fault that they killed Presley?"
She rubbed her head back and forth against the wood.
"Catherine?"
Mavis called in her little girl voice.
"Catherine, I'm scared."
Catherine sniffed, her eyes wet. She petted the door.
"I'm here, Poppy. I'm right here."
Mrs. Mason shook her head, her brunette hair stained with blood and dirt.
"Don't let her out."
Something banged against the door.
"Catherine, let us out."
The door banged again. Catherine pressed both palms against the door to keep the wood from breaking free of the hinges, and I helped her, leaning my back against it and pushing against the opposite wall with my shoes. Mavis sounded like a man again. I pushed my feet harder against the wall. As crazy as it sounded, Mavis was stronger when she was Duke.
"He killed Presley," I said in disbelief. "The guy. Duke."
"It was all of them," Mrs. Mason said, a single tear spilling down her cheek.
"She's dead."
She covered her mouth, trying to stifle her cries.
"Presley is dead."
The door banged again.
"Let us out!"
It was hard to tell who it was this time, as if they were all speaking.
"Stop!"
Catherine said, banging the side of her fist against the door.
"Stop it!"
she cried. I touched Catherine's hair. "It's okay. It's going to be okay."
"No,"
she said, shaking her head, her expression crumbling.
"They're going to take her away. I've locked her down there like an animal."
"Catherine," Mrs. Mason said, "she needs help. You can't protect her. She's getting worse. She..."
"I know,"
Catherine said, standing when the banging stopped. She wiped both eyes and looked down the hall.
"Elliot, get that table. We'll prop it against the door."
I did as she asked, rushing to the end of the hall and grunting when I picked up the table. Catherine moved to the side, and I propped it against the basement door as the sirens grew closer. I helped Catherine climb over the table, and then she ducked behind the check-in desk by the front door, handing a landline phone to Mrs. Mason. Mrs. Mason pressed 7 buttons and then held the phone to her ear.
Milo?
She laughed and cried at the same time.
Yes, I'm okay. I'm at the Juniper. Yes, the bed and breakfast. I'm okay. The police are coming. Just get here.
She cupped the phone in her mouth with one hand.
I love you too, she cried.
She turned, and I took Catherine by the hand, leading her to the base of the stairs. Catherine stared ahead, seeming numb. Look at me, I said, raking her hair from her face with my fingers, tucking the strands behind her ears. Catherine? Her big olive-green eyes looked up at me. Who was real? I asked. She swallowed.
No one.
Althea? She shook her head. You said 7.
Althea, Duke, Poppy, Willow, Uncle Toad, Cousin Imogen.
That's 6. She hesitated. Catherine? I prompted.
Mama, she blurted out. Mama is the 7th.
She leaned against my shoulder, and I pulled her into me, holding her tight as she sobbed. The sirens were just outside, and then there were only the red and blue flashes. The car door slammed, and Mr. Mason called frantically for his wife.
Becca?
Mrs. Mason pushed through the screen door, ambling toward him. I stood, watching them embrace and cry. The officers approached the Juniper, guns pulled and ready. I held up my hands, but the first officer grabbed me anyway, yanking my hands behind my back. Detective Thompson walked in and peered around, his gray mustache twitching.
Cuff him,
Thompson said.
Stop! It wasn't him,
Catherine said, standing.
She's downstairs. The person who took Mrs. Mason and Presley Brubaker.
Thompson raised an eyebrow.
Who?
Catherine's heart broke right in front of my eyes.
Mama, we locked her downstairs. She's 6, so be gentle.
Where's that?
First door on the right, past the kitchen. Don't hurt her.
Thompson directed the officers, then glared at me.
Don't move.
I nodded. Mavis cried out and then growled. Panicked voices of the officers began to get louder and rise from the lower level. Thompson leaned to the right, looked down the hall, and then ran for the basement door. Light flickered and smoke began to billow out. Thompson stepped to the side as 2 police officers breached the stairs with Mavis in tow. She was handcuffed, her feet dragging, her eyes vacant and fixed on the floor. The men puffed as they struggled to haul her dead weight. Catherine followed them with her eyes and then focused on the basement doorway.
What's that? What's going on? She asked.
Uncuff him,
Thompson said to the officer guarding us. He barked into his radio for the fire department.
Catherine, is there a fire extinguisher?
There's a fire? She asked.
One of the guys kicked something over down there. I'm not sure. Where's the extinguisher? In the kitchen?
He asked, turning his back to us.
No! No!
Catherine said, jerking away from the officer holding her.
Let it burn!
Thompson was disgusted at the suggestion.
She's as nuts as her mom. Get her out of here!
More officers ran from the basement, holding their fists to their mouths as they coughed from the smoke. Seconds later, we were pushed out the front door, too. We stood in the yard with the other officers and paramedics, watching the smoke escape from the door and windows like old ghosts released from their prison. More sirens sounded in the distance.
Catherine,
Mrs. Mason called, helped by her husband. She wrapped her arms around Catherine as we all peered up at the old wood being swallowed whole by the flames. Mr. Mason draped a blanket around his wife and Catherine, and Catherine peeked over her shoulder, watching officers carry Mavis to the second police cruiser. She ran to the car, touching her hand to the glass. I followed, watching Catherine whisper comforting words to her mother, speaking to Poppy, and then Althea. She wiped her cheeks and then